Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Underworld gets the unwelcome spotlight of publicity as the Senate's investigation subcommittee begins new hearings on crime. Arkansas Senator McClelland is at the helm. Attorney General Robert Kennedy paints a grim picture of the rise of lawlessness under the Cosa Nostra, or mafia. This he describes as the government of organized gambling, narcotics peddling, extortion, racketeering, and controlling of certain trade unions. He says the income runs into billions. These hearings always attract a large number of spectators. This one is particularly crowded, awaiting the first public appearance of Joseph Vellacki, the convicted hoodlum whose confessions to the FBI have reportedly put a price of $100,000 on his head by the infuriated mafia.
And welcome to the Savage Nation. That was then, this is now. In my day, it was men with soft vowels for last names, with gravelly voices taking the Fifth Amendment. Today, it is people with soft voices and Stanford degrees taking the Fifth Amendment to cover up the connections to the White House, to the other wonderful establishments run by Obama with regard to the 500 and some odd missing dollars, 500 million missing dollars in the Solargate scandal. Today was astonishing. The Solyndra executives took the Fifth Amendment at a congressional hearing today. In an unprecedented appearance, I've never seen anything like it. I searched the media to see this covered, and the rats, the little men who were not worthy of the name human being, let alone journalists, didn't cover this. I am opening up a page for you right now, the Associated Press, listing all of their news of the day, AP breaking news, top headlines. Not one word about solar executives taking the Fifth Amendment. Not one word. Casey Anthony takes fifth. Troy Davis's sister vows to carry on. Congress hits budget impasse. Obama lets states opt out of federal school rules. I never saw anything like that. But AP is in on the lie. The Associated Press is in the cover-up now with the Obama administration. Kobe gets $6.7 million offer to play in Italy, etc., and so on. But I'm going to play for you now some sound bites, because I did my homework for America. That's my job. I'm going to play for you sound bites of executives who were grilled today before Congress who would not answer any questions about where the $500 million went that Obama and the Energy Department gave to them with your money. Listen to clip 21.
Question for both of you, Mr. Harrison, Mr. Stover. In today's New York Times article about this problem, administration officials lay blame for Solyndra's problems on part of the global collapse. Some lawmakers on Capitol Hill question whether the firm's executives have engaged in a cover-up of their precarious financial condition. An aide to a top White House official, Valerie Jarrett, was met with three times to push for loans. Would you be willing to provide to this committee communications between yourselves or your senior executives with members of the West Wing of the White House, specifically Ms. Jarrett, Carol Browner, and Rahm Emanuel, or their staffs?
On the advice of my counsel, I invoke the privilege afforded to me by the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution, and I respectfully decline to answer any questions.
Mr. Stover, same question.
On the advice of my counsel, I invoke the privilege afforded by the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. I respectfully decline to answer any questions.
Could you believe that you're living in the United States that is now so corrupted under Obama that corporate executives are taking the Fifth Amendment at a congressional hearing with impunity because they're being covered for by the media that doesn't exist anymore? It shocks me to even have to report this. We are talking about a half a billion dollars that was given to these individuals under federal loan guarantees to start up a solar company. What is astonishing is that there were empty office buildings in the exact neighborhood where these wonderful, superb human beings built a new glass tower at the cost of hundreds of millions of dollars and then spent hemorrhaging cash on parties. They hemorrhaged cash so rapidly that the company went bankrupt. They are now blaming China for the bankruptcy, and they're being covered on this big lie by the Obama administration hacks in the Democrat Party. Let me ask you something. I want to ask my audience something. Is there a Democrat listening to this program now who believes it was appropriate for these executives to take the Fifth Amendment at the congressional hearings? And now I will ask the independents listening to this show another question. Don't you believe that they're taking the Fifth Amendment indicates that they're guilty? What it is that they're guilty of is pretty apparent to me. Why would corporate executives take the Fifth Amendment at a hearing like this unless they're guilty? Listen now to clip 20.
In this question, I am not asking you or compelling you to be witness against yourself, nor am I depriving you of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. This question is not a criminal basis or anything else, but it is important. What is your plan to pay back the taxpayers $535 million you owe them, and when will you pay it back? Mr. Harrison.
On the advice of my counsel, I invoke the privilege afforded to me by the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution, and I respectfully decline to answer any questions.
On the advice of my counsel, I invoke the privilege afforded by the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and respectfully decline to answer any questions.
Now, why do you think these guys were told to dummy up and take the Fifth? Why do you think they were told to do it? Let home addresses, families, soccer fields. Who do you think is threatening their lives? Because the one of them looked like he was about to die of a heart attack on the stand from fear, because he knows he's a liar. He knows he's lying. He knows America knows he's a liar. America knows he's a rat. America knows he's a crook. America can read right through it. And this man is up there repeatedly not answering a single question. But then, wait, it gets even better. Nostrilman, the most disgusting member of Congress. You know, there was a novel written over a century ago called The Portrait of Dorian Gray about a man who was a good-looking man when he was a youth, but as he leads a decadent life, his appearance starts to change because he becomes uglier as his soul becomes uglier. I mean, that's based sort of on the Pinocchio story, whereas the man, the character lies, his nose gets longer, right? In Congress, there is a man whose ugliness of soul has manifested in ugliness of physiognomy by the name of Henry Waxman. The man has, over the years, his nostrils have flared to an extent that he looks at for a while, porcine. That would be a word you can easily look up. But today when I watched Waxman, I saw not a porcine individual, but a rodent-like individual, an individual who took on the appearances of a rodent with flared nostrils, which is quite a hybrid right there. Listen now to clip 25 as this hybrid being, Representative Waxman, tries to cover up for the two individuals who would not answer a single question. Listen to, I think it's in clip 25.
The chairman could have easily have asked a few questions to ascertain whether the Fifth Amendment was going to be asserted. That's consistent with other situations in which we faced witnesses invoking the Fifth Amendment rights. But what we have instead heard today is a line of questions that seem designed to create catchy sound bites rather than establish...
Oh, shut up, you liar, you. Shut up, you filthy liar. Asking him as if he intending to pay back $500 million is a game to you, you filth... I don't even recognize the country I live in under this gang. This gang. Al Capone is smiling from hell. Al Capone is smiling from hell, and actually he's giving high fives to this group that has taken over this country. I've never seen anything like it. And they're getting away with it. They're adding insult to injury every day. They're taking more money. Another stimulus and more, $400 billion more. Because no matter how much is fed into the Democrat machine, it's not enough. And nobody's stopping them. These two stooges from Solyndra, they could care less. They told them, look, here's the situation. Okay, you're the sporting goods store. We took it out the back door. You're going to face the music, and if you say one word, let me tell you something. We know where your children play soccer. That's how I see. I watch too many movies. I mean, maybe it isn't that at all. Maybe they're two honest solar executives who simply were they tried their best to build solar panels. And, well, they ran through the $500 million so quickly they went broke. And they're very sorry. And the reason they took the Fifth Amendment is because they were heartbroken that they hurt the American taxpayer. That could be the possibility. Now, if you don't want me to do this today because it's too painful, I have a couple other topics I can talk about. The head of the Palestinians, Abbas, says that he will not recognize a Jewish state. At the same time he said there's going to be a Palestinian state, he said there will not be a Jewish state. That's number one. Number two, Romney is finished. Over. Done with. If you go to michaelsavage.com, my headline on Romney is quite clear, which is now we know why. My headline on what's his, I forget already the names. They're like interchangeable. Perry. Admiral Perry's son. The reason that Perry would not meet the Savage Nation is quite clear now. It's because he was in favor of granting in-state tuition for the children of illegals. Finished, gone, over with. The base is never going to vote for him. So he's been neutralized. And now it's again milquetoast Romney, Rockefeller Republican Romney, check pants Romney versus Obama. Again, Michael Savage is right. So now you know why Obama is a constitutional lawyer. It's because he studied the Constitution to learn how to destroy it. In other words, just because you're a constitutional lawyer doesn't mean you respect the Constitution. Obama studied the Constitution to learn how to get around it. That's what he did as a lawyer. Don't confuse him with an actual constitutional scholar who wanted to protect the Constitution. Here he has these solar executives abusing the Constitution by hiding behind the Fifth Amendment, which was never designed for questions of this nature. They were not asked to incriminate themselves. They were asked simply, are you going to pay back the $500 million? 1-800-449-8255 is michaelsavage.com. Also, on this Friday, I can read you sections from my bestseller, Abuse of Power. I have to tell you, I want to thank you again. If you missed, I wasn't on the air yesterday. I had emergency dental surgery. I'm much better today. I think it's over with. You won't hear me talking about it anymore. I'm a little tired from the anesthesia, truthfully, but the book, Abuse of Power, will be number 5 on the New York Times bestseller list in this Sunday's paper. You say, big deal? Okay, it is a big deal. It is a very big deal for somebody in talk radio, especially a conservative in talk radio, to break into the fiction list with his first novel. It's an extremely big deal for a first novelist to hit the New York Times bestseller list. And I want to thank my audience, and I want to tell you one thing. If you intend to buy the book for a Christmas present, will you do so this weekend, because it may not be on the stands in time. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The nation's underworld gets the unwelcome spotlight of publicity as the Senate's investigation subcommittee begins
right
new hearings
22.
On crime. Arkansas Senator McClellan is at the helm. Attorney General Robert Kennedy paints a grim picture of the rise of lawlessness under the Cosa Nostra, or mafia. This he describes as the government of organized gambling, narcotics peddling, extortion, racketeering, and controlling of certain trade unions. He says the income runs into billions. These hearings always attract a large number of spectators. This one is particularly crowded, awaiting the first public appearance of Joseph Vellacki, the convicted hoodlum whose confessions to the FBI have reportedly put a price of $100,000 on his head by the infuriated mafia.
To both Mr. Harrison and Mr. Stover, what we would like to know is who was the first in your company to realize that you were not going to be profitable? And when you became aware, was this discussed at a board meeting? And were DOE staff members present? Were White House employees or administration appointees present for such board meetings? And prior to your bankruptcy filing and your awareness of your financial straits, did you issue bonuses to your senior management, your leadership team, or your board? And was this discussed as an agenda item in a board meeting?
On the advice of my counsel, I invoke the privilege afforded to me by the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution, and I respectfully decline to answer any questions.
Mr. Stover?
On advice of my counsel, I invoke the privilege afforded by the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. I respectfully decline to answer the question.
So Harrison and Stover now are villains in the minds of millions of Americans who see what's going on. Their family should be ashamed of themselves. If they have sons and daughters, they should hide in shame for having fathers like this, in my opinion. Because during the period when this corrupt, degenerate Solyndra company was under review by the Energy Department, the company spent nearly $1.8 million on Washington lobbyists, employing six lobbying firms with direct ties to members of Congress and officials of the Obama administration, while none of the other three solar panel manufacturers that eventually got federal loan guarantees spent a dime on lobbyists. This goes all the way up the food chain. It goes, in my opinion, I think he needs to be grilled. Stephen Chu of the Energy Department needs to be grilled. Valerie Jarrett needs to be grilled. The entire Obama administration needs to come clean on this. I don't understand how a Democrat listening to this show could not see with their own eyes and their own ears by listening to this sound of corporate executives taking the Fifth Amendment, how dirty this administration is. I've never seen anything like it. And yet, if you search the media for this, you can't find it. You can't find it. Instead, the New York Times wrote a piece trying to cover it up and said that the government knew nothing about it. They worked simply overtime to make sure that it didn't touch Obama. And while this was going on, Michelle was dancing the night away with $42,000 cufflinks, the next day telling you to eat carrots and broccoli. WOR, Dennis, what do you think about all of this? Go on, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I just have to say it's an honor to be on your show. You are the boldest, best talk show host I've ever listened to. I'm a new listener, and I've been waiting for you to get back to the Solargate issue that you first brought up, I don't know, a few weeks ago.
Could you believe that corporate executives would take the Fifth on every question? Could you believe you'd come to a day like this in American history where they would get away with this, with the Congress not becoming outraged and in arresting them for contempt of Congress? I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power.
Savage.
I have not taken refuge behind the Fifth Amendment. It is my right to do so. I challenge this committee to produce any witness or evidence against me. And if they do not, I hope they will have the decency to clear my name with the same publicity with which they now have besmirched it.
Did anyone from DOE or OMB ever once discuss with you the issue that subordinating taxpayers to Solyndra's primary investors was a violation of the law, Mr. Harrison?
On the advice of my counsel, I invoke the privilege afforded to me by the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution, and I respectfully decline to answer any questions.
So now you are living in the United States of America, where corporate executives, soft speaking, Stanford type, Silicon Valley, accountants, won't answer a question before Congress. And instead of being cited for contempt of Congress with some anger, along the lines of what we had when we used to have men in Congress like McClellan, men who would have banged the gavel down and been outraged by this behavior. Instead, they're allowed to leave because Nostrilman, the portrait of Dorian Stinko, Nostrilman, the portrait of Dorian Gray, Nostrilman, the porcine hybrid, dares to get up and say Congress is at fault for asking these men these questions. This is the country you're now living in. Beware the government media complex. And now you understand what happens when you have a community organizer take over the United States of America. How do you feel living in the country today, knowing that these guys cost the taxpayers over $535 million and basically we're not getting any answers fundamentally? And do you think that they're taking the Fifth indicates they're innocent or that they're guilty and why? North Carolina, Danny, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage. I had to go to the doctor this morning, so got your book yesterday. I figured I'd take it along to read while I was in the waiting room. I stop at the light on the way there, look to my right. A guy's reading your book at the light, so I toot the horn, show him my copy. We both gave the thumbs up. It was like a savage moment.
That was you're in North Carolina. Where in North Carolina, Danny?
In Raleigh.
they're allowed to sell my book in Raleigh, North Carolina, The Heart of Liberalism?
No, it was there, you know. Actually, I went to the store and I seen it, but I already...
But truthfully, I got it, Danny, honestly, you're from New York originally, right? You retired down there or you're working down there?
I'm retired. I'm from the Bronx. Come on. You know the accent.
No, I can tell by the accent. But, Danny, you know, I understand a lot of New Yorkers are moving to North Carolina. It seems to be a haven now for some reason.
Oh, big time. It's beautiful, Raleigh. It really is.
Why? What do you like about it? All of the girls with nipple rings? With nose rings? Is it the girls with nose rings or is it the boys with O-rings?
Yeah, right? Well, you know, so far we've only been here 2 months and my wife and I absolutely love it.
Well, what do you got, a condo? You're renting a condo?
No, well, I actually rent it now because we were in Arizona and we made a big error by purchasing the house 3 years ago.
Look, you're in the position a lot of people are in because of trickle-up poverty created by Obama. He wants to wipe out the middle class so that there's only people like the Solyndra executives, and then everyone else is a peon. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to make you Christmas for you, Danny, because I don't know that the books will be in the store by then. I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power for your call. Everyone who gets on the show today gets a free copy of my novel because, well, I'm giving them away. That's all. Call me Crazy Eddie if you want. Call me Crazy Mikey. I don't care. I'm giving them away. Anyone who gets through my call screen at Doug today. I had a day from dental hell. But it turned out okay. That's all. I'm a little hungover from the procedure between the injections and the insertions. Whatever. I'm sitting here. It's only a tooth, you know. This is what happens. In the end, it's all about sans eyes, sans teeth, sans all. As Shakespeare. No, come on. Just a tooth, that's all. Did anyone listening to this show ever see The Sopranos? Raise your hand. Yes. You know I've given you the analogy before, right? In the series, and a lot of people don't get HBO, but in the series The Sopranos, which is a fictionalized version of a crime family in New Jersey, there's a very famous sequence of a guy who owns a big sporting goods store. I don't mean a little mom and pop. I mean a big one, right? Big grossing sporting goods store. He happens to be a degenerate gambler. So he wants to get into a private card game that's run by his friend Tony Soprano. They know each other from childhood. This guy who runs a sporting goods store is a straight guy, wife and kid, but he's a gambler. So he comes to Tony, says, Tony, please let me into the game. Tony says, you're going to get hurt, Pat. I'm not letting you in. You're going to get hurt. He says, no, please let me in, Tony. I got to gamble. He says, are you sure? He says, because believe me, if you lose, you're going to pay. Tony, I swear I can handle it. All right. He gets wiped out in the card game. And what happens is the Soprano gang takes over the sporting goods store. Now they're sitting in the back office of the sporting goods store every day, and they're busting the store out. They're selling out all of the goods, and the goods are disappearing. They're not paying the suppliers. They're just ordering more goods, and they're going little by little bankrupt. And they're just, the store is emptying out. Now they're taking the credit that they have in the store, and they're buying first-class airline tickets in bulk, and they're selling them at a discount to people. They're busting the store out until eventually there's nothing left and the store is closed. This is exactly what it looks like to me with Solyndra. Solyndra looks like the sporting goods store. That's, admittedly, I watch too many movies. I admit that. New York, Lewis, you're on the Savage Nation from WOR Radio. Go ahead, please.
Michael, as a criminal defense attorney here in New York, it is abundantly clear that these gentlemen are criminals. And had I been working for the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C., I would have strapped some handcuffs on these gentlemen and put them in some orange jumpsuits and charged them with...
Well, I want to add, you're an attorney, you're a defense attorney now. You've got two corporate guys refusing to answer a single question. Could they not have been charged with contempt of Congress, Lewis?
Well, I think it depends on the chairman of the committee. I guess arguably they could have, however... I doubt that a judge would actually carry out that charge, honestly. I just still think that the U.S. Attorney's Office can walk in and have them charged with intentionally defrauding the taxpayer. They knew that their corporation was going to go bankrupt, and they still took $535 million in loan guarantees, which is absolutely criminal to anyone.
So they could be charged already because while they were demanding more money or asking for it, they were already in default.
Yes, and I think that administration officials could be charged with the same thing, and I think that Obama could be impeached. I know we have cowards in Congress right now with no spine and would never bring articles of impeachment forward. But I think arguably, if this does go up to Obama, which, again, anyone who has a fair mind would say it does, could say that Obama can be impeached because of this.
Well, that's right. Let's look at why Obama could be impeached because of Solargate. Mr. Rogers said, Matthew C. Rogers, the Energy Department guy overseeing the loan guarantee program, said in March of 2009, just days before Solandra got its provisional loan commitment, they said that Energy Secretary Chu had been personally urging faster action on the loans. And even though people within the Energy Department said, we've got to go slower, we've got to do our due diligence, they were forced to give the loan. They were pushing the loan. There was political interference from the top. Now, why? It turns out that George B. Kaiser, a billionaire from Tulsa, Oklahoma, was a giant fundraiser for Obama's 08 campaign and a backer of a foundation that is Solandra's leading investor. Does that not add up to you as collusion?
Absolutely, Michael. And I would actually throw the question back to you. Do you think that this could be deemed treason? I think this is a treasonous act. Using taxpayer dollars and the United States government to score political points with a party and make a political point to try and get reelected or at least build a political alliance to get reelected.
I could never see treason being being supported by anybody, but I could see corruption. I could, you know, look, high crimes and misdemeanors, right? Let's stick to the basics. Crime, high, you're never going to prove that Obama approved the loan because, like in any organization that is corrupt, there are button men. Okay, I mean, we've all studied our movies. There are men in between. They're buffers, right? There are buffers, rather. Buffers. In between the head of the organization and guys at the bottom. So there's no direct contact between them. It's very hard to prove. But they certainly could go up the food chain and start questioning Valerie Jarrett. They have evidence that she met with these guys.
Absolutely, Michael. Like I said, the administration officials are just as guilty as the executives.
But, Lewis, as a criminal defense attorney, I know this is not unprecedented. Can you then name for me other cases where corporate executives pled the Fifth Amendment to every question, not to a few questions, but every question they were asked?
I think this might be unprecedented, Michael. I can't, off the top of my head, really dive into that and say that there ever has
been. In other words, I know that corporate executives in the past have pled the Fifth selectively, but not in toto. I've never seen it done. I have never seen them dummy up. They were, in my opinion, they were told by people above them, you dummy up or you're going to wind up, let us say, period, and fill in the blank. This looks to me like absolute terrified men, especially the second one. He looked like he was dying up there. Chief Financial Officer W.G. Stover looked as though he was going to keel over from fainting during his testimony.
Michael,
let me send you a free copy of Abuse of Power because I have seen Abuse of Power. America should see the abuse of power. It's astounding to me right now that this is being covered up by the media. It's amazing to me. And you don't want to hear how accurate I really am? One of them went to Stanford, just as I said. Remember I was joking here, one of them. Harrison received his bachelor's in chemical engineering from Stanford, right? Remember I said in my day it was men with soft vowels and gravelly voices who took the Fifth? And now it's men with soft voices and Stanford degrees who are taking the Fifth under Obama. I've never seen anything like this. Here's a good caller coming up. This is a beautiful one. Here's a beauty. Longview, Texas. Lance, go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage, can you imagine what the media would do if this was an oil executive pleading the Fifth?
Oh, my God. Could you imagine if after the Exxon Valdez had gone aground and spilled its oil up in Prudhoe Bay, however many years ago that was, when the executives of Exxon were grilled, if they had ever taken the Fifth, could you imagine what the Democrats would have done?
The Democrats, all the media, everybody would have been on them. They're crooks. And this,
I've never seen anything like this, though. This is the most unprecedented day in my life in politics. I've never seen anything like it, Lance. But your question is quite apt. There is no question that had this been a fossil fuel individual who had gotten a grant from Bush, for example, and then the grant was not paid back within less than a year, they go bankrupt on we're not talking $5 million here, Lance. You're talking $535 million.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what's really galling here, is because the green movement is so pristine. And it's
no, the green movement is a scam from top to bottom. It's all corrupt, top to bottom. The green movement is a scam, top to bottom. I stand by those words. The whole thing is a scam. It's the sporting goods store being set up across America. I'm sending you abuse of power because we're living through it. Let's take another call. New York, Carl, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, listen, those Salandra executives are pimps. It's the United States government all along, but I did not know that till today, Mike, because of your show. The other thing is, most of those guys that are DAs, they become, when they become good DAs, they go to work for the other side because they learn how to beat the law, just like Obama did with the constitutional law degree.
Yes. Yes, Obama studied the Constitution to learn how to beat it. So you're saying, what DAs? You mean the congressional guys who are defending, asking the questions, or the Democrats?
The defense attorneys for some of these big criminals, especially.
Oh, yeah. Of course. In fact, I know that for a fact. I knew it for a fact. Many of the most vehement liberals who went to work originally to help the poor, wound up working for drug dealers. I saw that over and over again when I was a young man. Many of them who trained on defending the poor, the indigent, soon gave that up and went to work for the most notorious drug dealers of their time. I saw that over and over again. Some of the most left-wing defenders of the poor became the biggest defenders of drug dealers. Where do we go from here? At least we have a congressional hearing, but do you actually think these guys are going to go down?
Oh, you think they're
going to actually indict them?
It's a cover-up. It's a total cover-up. They're taking the heat. That's all they are. They're the buffers.
They're the buffers. That's right. They were told to shut their mouths or else.
And
they will take the heat. One or both of them will go to jail, but nobody else will. They're taking the heat, and they know it. These accountants are going to go away. There's no question about it. But I guarantee you that any linkage to anybody above them will be shredded by people who will seize their records, if they haven't been shredded already. If they weren't in a shredding truck on the way from the seizure to the mother load, they had a shredder in the truck. All right, I'm sending you abuse of power because we're living through an abuse of power. Oh, God, do I have good callers. Really good callers. If you care to join the program today and speak to more people than you will meet for the rest of your life, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We are talking about dirty clean energy. We are talking about dirtbags and clean energy. We are talking about filthy greens. We are talking about the dirtiest industry in the history of the world in terms of ethics. In other words, the green industry is the dirtiest industry in the history of America in terms of ethics. The lowest ethics with the highest verbiage. And don't think it's limited to them. Al Corleone, in my opinion, has been scamming the world for quite a few years with this global warming lie. And if you think I'm supporting dirty energy, you're wrong. No, my friend, I've done more to defend the environment than any of you lousy, stinking left-wing liars sitting there in your double-talking suits. The fact of the matter is, before you were even born, I was in the jungles of the South Pacific trying to save the rainforest. So don't lecture me about green. Don't lecture me ever about the environment. Long before you even knew what the word was, I was saving tropical rainforests. So now you have all of these professionals in the business, because none of them have actually ever been in these areas, but they are so sensitive about them. I'm angry about it because I've worked in the areas of trees and plants and herbal medicine for so long, but it's almost heartbreaking to see gangsters going into the field of green energy. Same as recycling. I don't recycle. The same as recycling. You know that the energy cost of recycling is higher than the cost that you're saved in terms of energy. You don't know that. All of you people put plastic in one box and paper in another. The actual energy cost of recycling those items, but it's a religion in America today. It's a religion like many other things. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Was there always a buffer involved? There's someone in between you and your possible superiors who gave the actual order.
Right, yeah, buffer. The family had a lot of buffers.
Gentlemen, I would like to know what role you all played in the subordination and whether or not your company or agents of your company came up with the legal theory that allowed subordination in direct conflict with what the statute passed by this Congress says. So if each of you could answer that, I would appreciate it.
On the advice of my counsel, I invoke the privilege afforded to me by the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, and I respectfully decline to answer any questions.
On advice of my counsel, I invoke the privilege afforded by the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. I respectfully decline to answer the question.
So now it's life imitating art, right? Now it's life imitating art. Now we have these guys from the solar company taking the Fifth Amendment before the world, and the news media covers it up. Instead, they're talking about a slut from Hollywood falling down, another one ordering a Starbucks and burning his tongue. Anything but the realities of what we are living through. And that is how the world is today, as I see it, September 23rd, 2011. The fact of the matter is we are now living in, we're living through something America has never yet gone through, never. And that is because we not only have a communist for president, but we have a corrupt communist for president. You see, there's several varieties I keep explaining to you. You keep saying he's a socialist, he's a this. You don't even understand what it means, most of you. I explained it in Trickle-Up Poverty. I laid out for you how the gang that put him in power milked us, killed us, created the banking crisis, and never made out. They never did as well as they did since he became president. Some of them wound up higher on the Forbes billionaire list. Put two and two together. Look into the Managed Funds Association. Take a look at the people who killed the banks in the last thing. Take a look at them doing it all over again. Now they have the green scammers. And no one's covering it to speak of. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here's what's on MichaelSavage.com today. Top right, you found out why Perry would not meet the Savage Nation when it turned out in his last debate with, of all people, Romney, that he granted in-state tuition for illegal alien children. That's why, I'm sorry to say, Perry would not meet the Savage Nation. You talk about abuse of power. My, it doesn't end, does it? Michael Savage, abuse of power, number four on the New York Times bestseller list. Yeah, okay. It debuts at number four on the New York Times bestseller list. Also, the Solyndra executives pled guilty. Well, excuse me, they pled the Fifth Amendment. That's it. That's like pleading guilty, isn't it? It's unheard of. The executives took the Fifth Amendment. I never saw anything like it in my life. A boss at the UN says Israel is an apartheid state. Really? Tell us about Syria. Media bias on display as NBC grills Susskind, whoever that is. Obama sold Israel bunker buster bombs. Oh, that's interesting. Holder's Hell Week. Yeah, right. ISA has called for a special prosecutor to get to the bottom of Fast and Furious. You think it'll wind up like John Mitchell, an attorney general on the Hill? I doubt it. How about Wiregate? Soros turns up in Light Squared Imbroglio. Read all about it. Abbas prepared to seek statehood at UN. Solyndra, the Solar Gate. The employees said that the big loan from the government led to lavish spending, including building a corporate headquarters when there were empty buildings on the same street they could have bought. Lawyers netted millions in a loan deal on Solargate. Southwest Airlines and the feds are probing Arabic markings on planes. Obama's favorability numbers are dropping among blacks. Columbia students are excited about dining with Iran's Hitler Ahmadinejad, the star of NBC. Rangel's portrait to be unveiled on Capitol Hill 1 year after he was censored by House colleagues. Oh, God. A rogues gallery. Organic strawberries? Not so. Read the article. Dead federal retirees are paid $120 million annually to their relatives. Family fined for holding Bible study in their home. Fifth graders are being quizzed on the proper condom use. See? See what diversity has led to? Perversity. All this and more on MichaelSavage.com. I see already we're dead in the water if no one's listening. Where is everybody? What's wrong with them? I mean, admittedly, I'm a little under the weather. I'm not as snappy as I normally am. I'm not, you know, my razor wit is not quite as my rapier as it is normally. But okay, I'm still giving you news, reviews. What do you want me to do next? Crucify myself on the air? Would you like to hear the sound of me cutting a wrist? Would that entertain you? We can go get a serrated knife if you'd like to hear me cut my wrist. Maybe that would entertain the audience. Okay, no. I couldn't even get a call out of them on that. Where are they today? What, did everyone go to Sardinia for the summer? Is everybody in Corsica? Where are they all? I'm mentioning those weird Mediterranean island nations because although I'm halfway there, I'm backing up. I was supposed to go from here. I didn't tell you. From here, I was going to go fly to Rome. That's only an 11-hour flight. You know how much I love flying. You know how much I love the TSA and flying. There's nothing like it. I was going to fly from here to Rome and then meet a friend's yacht off the coast of Italy and go from the coast off the coast of Rome, you know, into the Mediterranean. So one of the things I wanted to do was go to Elba, where Napoleon had been exiled. I've been meaning to go there since I'm a young man. I've always been fascinated by Napoleon's exile years more than his insane Hitler-like rule. I was very interested in Napoleon's exile years. And the first place he had been exiled to was Elba. So I was going to say, okay, do you think we can go to Elba? I'd like to see where Napoleon was, you know, that kind of thing. He escaped Elba, by the way. So then they exiled him to St. Helena, which is in the South Atlantic. And he never recovered from that one. Napoleon was basically a Hitler without concentration camps. Napoleon decimated the French male population to the extent that they never recovered from it. Do you know what I'm saying to you? I'm not saying there aren't individual tough French guys. There are plenty of them. But as a nation, their masculinity was wiped out by Napoleon. And mainly in his war against Russia, where he got wiped out in the winter. That winter, when they came back, that was the end of the testosterone of France. After that, it was liberté, colonie, fraternité. You know, it became a kind of a different nation. Doesn't mean there aren't tough French guys. You know, you still have the French Foreign Legion. And occasionally, you'll find a French truck driver who can, you know, bluster here and there. But by and large, it's a nation of beaten up men because the best stock of the French male was decimated by Napoleon. And the strange thing about the French are very much like New Yorkers. They have an arrogance about them based on nothing. Every schmuck from New York thinks he's superior because he lived in New York or lives in New York. And you ask him why. I mean, oh, I'm from New York. And so what? Well, we have theaters and culture. Yeah, you don't go to them, but you have them. And moreover, what do you have to do with culture, most of these guys? Nothing. Zero. Their culture is the Sopranos. Their culture is like the Sopranos. That's their idea of culture. I don't understand this whole singing thing. It's the same with the French. That attitude itself is based upon Napoleon's conquests, which is like over, you know, for 150 years now. You know, do you understand what I'm saying? Do you get this whole thing? I'm like building up now. I'm overcoming the erythromycin in the gum. I'd like to take that dentist, what he did to me. The nerve of him, he was like, he put a torque wrench in my head without anesthesia, without even warning me. He was talking it down like a truck driver would talk a nut on a tire on an icy road to make sure that the tire didn't fall. And he's turning this ratchet set in my head. Till eventually I tried every system on earth until I started pounding the chair like, you know, like in mixed martial arts, you tap out. I tapped out in the dental chair. I was afraid to jump up that he would take off my lip, which would have, of course, pleased all of the libs out there. You know, with one lip, I'm more articulate than most liberals. So he's talking. So I tap out on the chair, tap, tap, tap. I said, I can't take this anymore. I need a break. But again, no anesthesia, nothing. I don't know if the guy's a sadist or, and this, I got to tell you this, you know, this, if this keeps up, I'm going to report him to the state because he has assistants in there, like third worlders work for him. I don't know whether he gets them on the cheap. They appear during dental surgery in street clothing. I don't even know if the instruments are sterilized. I don't understand. There's like third world dental care I had. I would have been better off at a dental school than what I had. So I have a mild, like, you know, upper thing that, whatever. And I had the worst Italian meal of my life here in Florida. And I'll tell you why I'm angry. Because the restaurant makes believe that it's got the you know, like the hottest, like New York Italian garbage. I don't believe, you know what the Italian restaurants are doing lately? From east to west, you know what they're cheating you on? Tomato sauce. Because tomatoes went up in price. They're very expensive. So they had like a thing, we only use San Marzano tomatoes, the finest tomatoes. I ordered a dish, there was almost no sauce in it. But I didn't want to complain, okay? I didn't want to complain, but the food was awful, dreadful. Now, couple that with people from wherever, Tallahassee, Brooklyn, Staten Island, Newark, New Jersey, sitting there under the fans, who don't know what they're eating. They have no idea if they're even eating. And they're glad to even get a waiter to serve them a drink. I actually know food. I could not believe that they would serve food that's on such a low level as this. I'm not going to mention the restaurant because I may actually go back there one day for a beer. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
It, I don't like it. I gotta play only things I like because there's memories, that's all. Most people don't like this music anyway to begin with. It's antiquated, old. It's like a 55 Buick Roadmaster. I mean, who would drive a rusty Buick Roadmaster? Nobody. Well, if it's restored, it's another story. Now, look, I've done it already. I'm not gonna do it. I need to breeze through this hour. It's Friday. I don't wanna give myself a migraine before the weekend. So let's play it. Let me pick a rock and roll tune. Can we talk about anything except politics? Unless there's a great caller. Unless there's some great callers, I don't know. Let's clean the board off here and start all over again. You know, I don't know if I want to do politics now. I want to go into something else. Pig's feet, tripa, whatever. I can't eat tripa. I can't eat it. The idea of eating the guts of another animal, I mean, I can't do it. I told you I did. It's not alien to my culture. My mother ate brains. She ate intestine. I puked when I looked at that stuff, but all right. She ate it. What are you going to do? She lived to 88, so she must have known what she was doing. God bless her. Who could eat brains? I don't get it. Not only that, I mean, it turns out that, you know, you look at all these organ meats you talk about from a point of view of health. According to our hysteria about cholesterol, they're no-nos because you can't eat liver. High cholesterol, we know that. Even though it's fabulously rich in iron and other minerals that we all need, which explains why many of us are deficient in these nutrients because we've given up some of the most important parts of the animal. Like the liver. You should have liver once in a while, by the way. Forget your Lipitor and your insanity. Okay, have a piece of liver every once in a while. You'll find out that you have more energy than you've had in years. The iron that would run through your system, you finally feel like a man again. You wouldn't need Viagra and you wouldn't need the Lipitor. You'd feel like a human being again with something between your ears. I was going to say something else, but it's a family show. So I wouldn't say go to the brains department. That is, the brains are the most cholesterol-rich organ of the cow. And secondly, you can get Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease from eating uncooked brains. That's something that I don't want to go into, but it's related to the Lou Gehrig's disease, so to speak. That was a part of my PhD dissertation. You don't want to mess around with uncooked brains. We have enough of them in Washington. Not funny. Okay, throwaway line. Whatever. Now I want to just drift. I want to cruise through the hour. I want to be like a manatee in the intracoastal. I want to be like a pelican flying over Boca Raton in a soft wind. I want to be like a bluebird on Al Jolson's nose. You want me to just do word jazz? I'll do word jazz. I just gave you three pieces of word jazz. I could play a tune to those three couplets, couldn't I? Is that like a bluebird in Al Jolson's nose? That's a nice image, right? It's almost a Maiku. That's also funny, that, for those of you who know what I just said. Maiku as opposed to haiku. You didn't catch that one? Okay. That was a Maiku. Bluebird on Al Jolson's nose, manatee in the intracoastal. You ever see those pelicans flying over that strip of land in Florida? It's astounding. The pelican is one of my favorite seabirds. They're allegedly they're kind of like green dinosaurs that adapted to the times over millions of years. Now, they're once pterodactyls, and they figured out, okay, that game is over. All right, let's re-engineer ourselves. That should take about 10,000 years. Cut down on the legs, cut down on the body. You don't need all that girth. We're going into a new age. It's pretty bad out there. Meteor hit the earth. Less to eat. So shrink it up, girls. We're going to lose some weight. We're no longer going to be pterodactyls. We're going to be pelicans. That thing about penguins really gets to me. Holding the egg, the father holds the egg, and the mother goes swimming. My God. I'd like to give to a pelican society. Is there a pelican saving group or something? Whale killers, I'd like to personally put on a harpoon myself. I think that we have to stop the whale murderers. I really mean that. It's heartbreaking to let the Japanese and the Norwegians kill those animals. Never mind the clubbing up there by the drunks in Alaska. Yeah, everything is ethnic. The ethnic excuse to beat them to death with a club. So, oh, I'm sorry, it's your ethnic right to slaughter a whale. Pardon me. Oh, you're different than everybody else on the world today. Go club seals to death because it's in your culture. Go ahead. Anyone says anything, you're a racist white male. Go beat a seal to death, a little white seal pup with a club. Call yourself a man. Go ahead. Vote for a Democrat. Vote for Al Gore. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'm getting such beautiful letters. By the way, I want to take a moment now. I finally, folks, all of you who've sent donations to the Savage Defense Fund, I can't thank each of you by name on the show, and I'm sure many of you don't want to be thanked by name on the show. You'd rather remain anonymous. I finally had a list printed up, so I'm getting some feeling of who's sending because I never look at it. And I want to thank each and every one of you individually, but I can't. I'm going to be sending you a letter soon to thank you. That's all I can say. And certain amongst you, I'm going to get a book. I'm going to send you a book. It's all I can do. It's all I have to give you. I thought about something today in bed before I got up. I said, you know, the other animals feel. They can be sensitive. They have emotions. They can love. Not perhaps in the same way a human can love, but I'm not so sure of that. In other words, I think my dog loves more purely than a human ever did. If I go out for 10 minutes, he jumps like crazy. He doesn't know it's 10 minutes or 10 years. Crazy, jumping, loving. You know, it's something to behold. It's almost painful in a way to see an animal so attached to you. So, okay, love, they say, is a divine human emotion, and I'm sure it is. But it's not unique to the human animal, okay? It's also seen in the animal world as well. An ape can love, a dog can love, etc. I'm sure many other animals that you get to know can love you. But what does the human being do that lower animals, so to speak, cannot do? Speak, articulate language, and write. And so the thing that distinguishes man from other animals is his use of language, my friends. Think about it. So when we have a society that is so debased by the media, where a rap song is held up to the level of a rhapsody, where Beethoven and a gangbanger are held up in the same level, you understand that we're descending, we're not ascending. You understand that we're going backwards, not forwards. Do you understand why when a person sits and text messages or emails all day long, they're actually diminishing their IQ? You understand what I'm saying? You're actually devolving as a creature. You're devolving. You are diminishing your capacity to read and to write, let alone to speak. You don't speak on these devices, but you can read and you can write. So when you reduce your writing to hieroglyphics without punctuation, without thinking about tenses, you're actually going back in time, which is why it's a very, very poor prognosis for the future of Western civilization.
Savage.
Since people have jumped and bought Abuse of Power, my new novel, and they're mainly my audience. I think that they're in the mood for a thriller, and a new thriller that just hit the theaters today is called Killer Elite. That's a movie. And we're joined by the star of the movie Killer Elite, Jason Statham, who has starred in such movies as Transporter, The Mechanic, and The Expendables. Jason Statham, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to speak with you.
Well, without giving away the entire plot of the movie, can you give us an overview of your new movie, Killer Elites?
The movie's about, it's based on a true story, based on a book by Sir Ranulph Fiennes called The Featherman. It's about events that he witnessed while he was serving in the SAS. Basically, I play a character called Danny Bryce, who has to rescue his friend and mentor out of a prison. And that starts the events.
It's said that the movie is based on true events. How accurate is the movie compared to the actual events that took place?
Well, that's, you know, there's always some artistic license when you're making a movie. And, you know, I think a movie's credibility is not to be judged on how accurate it is. But, you know, it's certainly something that Gary McKendry was keen to get as close to the book as possible. But, you know, a book is so long, you could never fit that into the 90 minutes of movie sort of window.
How much research did you have to do to prepare for your part, Jason?
You know, Gary McKendry, the director, just had all the information I needed. So, you know, he'd spent 7 years on this subject. And, you know, he was a great source of anything that I needed.
And did you get along with Robert De Niro? Did you work well together?
Yeah, it's something you'll always remember. It's an amazing privilege to work with someone as great as Robert De Niro. And, something you'll never forget.
Jason, as you may know, I've been banned in Britain. Tell us about the shadowy organization of British elites named the Feathermen who are involved in your movie. It sounds eerily familiar to what I describe in Abuse of Power.
Well, there are a bunch of SAS soldiers that basically have this protective cloak around anyone that served in the SAS, and they're retired, and it's their own sort of force, basically taking care of themselves.
What was the most difficult stunt that you had to do yourself in the movie, Jason?
There's a ton of difficult stunts in this. We really pushed the boundaries on this one. We got some great fights and some very thrilling leaps, and sometimes they can be very dangerous. So we really exceeded what we normally do.
Jason Statham, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me.
This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back. Savage. Now lead into the word culture wars, because when I first began in radio, the culture wars were everywhere, and these were big discussion topics. I'm going to read you some of these discussion topics from the 10 years ago or 15 years ago and ask you what happened to the culture wars: abortion, animal rights, bilingual education, creation, evolution, family values, death penalty, drugs, flag burning, feminism, gun politics, law and order, media bias in the U.S., moral absolutism versus moral relativism, multiculturalism, permissivism, political correctness, euthanasia, secularism and secularization, the so-called separation of church and state, sexual education, stem cell research. Every one of those words has triggered a thought in your mind. Each one is a sort of explosive device. And yet, do you hear anyone discussing 99% of those topics anymore? Now, you wouldn't expect it to be discussed by anyone on the left, because they've won on virtually every one of those points. I can go right down the list. It's as though the culture wars are over and the radical communist left has won. So what is left for them to do? If they've won on the culture war front, what's left but to take away your dignity? And then after they take away your dignity and they take away your guns, they will take you away and put you into a re-education camp, as has been done by every Marxist revolution in the history of this sad earth. That's what's coming unless you start to understand what's at stake. Unless you stand up and fight back against these evil degenerates. Make no mistake about it. It's not just simply a choice between one way of looking at things and another, just a different lifestyle, just a different opinion. No, they're going after your dignity, then your guns, and then your freedom. That's exactly all I have left to take down. They've done everything else. They've debased virtually everything else that was worth holding on to in this society. They've beaten you on every level. I put up the good fight. I fought the good fight. When my day comes that I have to leave the earth, if I have a moment to think about it, I'll say, well, at least I fought the degenerate Bolsheviks with everything I had. I gave it everything I could. I threw everything I could at the enemy. Now you say, well, okay, you've done very well doing it. I did very well doing it, but it ain't over yet. I've also paid a very high price, and I don't want to sit here and cry to you. That's my problem. I took on a government, and I lost. Do you understand that? I took on a government, and I lost. The evil British government, the phony, fake, conservative British government under whatever his name is, who came along and promised that they would take my name off that list of banned individuals, joined with the communists, the so-called Labour Party, and kept me on a list with murderers and terrorists, which is a shocking thing to think that the vermin in the media won't even cover the story. But I'm not here to play victim. I'm a big, big man. I realize I got myself into trouble by speaking the truth to power. And I have to dig myself out of the hole. And I want to thank all of you who have and continue to contribute to the legal fund. Without you, I would have been buried a long time ago. But thankfully, I have a fund and I'm fighting them and I haven't given up. I want you to know that. But there are other fights to be had, both domestic and foreign. And the fact of the matter is, you're not fighting them. When have you last fought over any of these issues? When have you last called a radio show and heard a discussion about abortion, about animal rights, family values, why that went out with the with Newt Gingrich? Death penalty? When have you last talked about the death penalty? When have you last talked about the drug war and the drug war's failures? When have you last talked about flag burning, about feminism, about the media bias in the U.S.? Well, we do that on a fairly regular basis. We know what that is. Have you last heard anyone fighting over multiculturalism and how it's devastated the dominant culture in the society and how multiculturalism is a code word for attacking whitey? Have you last, when have you last heard anyone arguing over euthanasia? You've given up on that. When they put your grandmother to sleep because they don't have the money to take care of her, you'll say, oh, well, I guess it's better that way. Then there's more more money in the Obamacare system for the drug addict. When have you last heard anyone arguing over about breaking churches off war memorials, breaking crosses off war memorials, with which the communists do? Have you recently discussed abstinence as opposed to sexual mania? Have you recently heard a discussion or an argument over stem cell research? No. Since Obama, the Marxist, has come to power, they have assumed they won all of these battles. And with the check-pants Republicans running the other side, they have won on all of these issues. So I'm trying to tell you why I'm so agitated over Obama continuing to not only degrade and denigrate the United States of America, but the language itself, the way all Marxists work. I've told you what they do. They destroy the culture, first from within and then from without. But he glorifies in it. He glories in his decimation of everything decent about our society, doesn't he? He literally takes a certain, you can almost taste the pleasure he gets in inviting an illiterate gutter rat to the White House. He has tremendous pleasure in what he is doing. And there's not a word coming out of the media on this. You may hear it here and there on talk radio. I think it's a pretty big topic on talk radio, what he did by calling this garbage poetry when we know it isn't poetry. And yet he invited these failures from the universities and from the streets and from the record companies, obviously in order to appease and appeal to a certain base levels of the electorate. But some of them actually had the nerve to compare rap music to Shakespeare. I doubt that they've ever read Shakespeare. I don't think they could quote anything from Shakespeare. But listen to clip 24 when you will hear one of these illiterates invited onto the Fix News Network in 24.
So I think you can pull out lyrics from Shakespeare, and they would be offensive, you know, kind of under these standards.
See the word offensive? That's a radical left-wing word for anything that they find objectionable. They call it offensive. It offends them. This is not about offensive lyrics. You see, she misses the point on purpose. The entire structure of rap music is offensive. It's not that all of Shakespeare is offensive. Sure, you can pull a word out here and there and it might be offensive, but it's not about Shakespeare's literacy that we're arguing. We're arguing about the illiteracy of the individuals that the Obamas invited into our White House and debased it by inviting these individuals into the White House and calling it poetry. Of course, that would take a little degree of thought to come up with what I just said. And so, sure, hip-hop may reflect the current situation in urban ghettos. So, big deal. Does that make it poetry? No. It makes it a political statement, not poetry. But this is what the radical vermin on the left have done to our universities over the last 20 years. They have destroyed the English language itself. They have let people who they let into the universities who never qualified to even be there in the first place. They rigged up the exams. They destroyed standards. They brought in people who could never qualify to be in a university for many different reasons. And they said, now you're a student. So when the student couldn't keep up with the class, they lowered the common denominator down to the level of the student. And suddenly they gave the student the ammunition by saying, oh, do you find it offensive that they're forcing you to read Shakespeare, a white male? Well, why don't you tell them how you see the world in your own words? The next thing you know, you wake up, click, click. There is the president of the United States, himself a product of all of this, by the way, ushered along every step of the way because of the political expediency of the radical left and the acquiescence of all those who knew better. And there we now see what he does when he's in the White House. He degrades and denigrates it on a daily basis. So let me take a quick call. Dave in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Can you shed a little light on the canine hero, Eddie, and his role in your book?
Okay. Eddie is based upon a real-life persona of my dog, Teddy, the 11-pound poodle. Teddy's 7 years old. Eddie, I don't know how old he is in the book, maybe five. By the way, I read an article yesterday about caring for your dog in his senior years. It was so touching. It was frightening. In fact, as I was going to sleep, I was playing with Teddy, and I said to him, Teddy, you're going to be a senior in only 2 years. You're my little senior dog. It was so touching because, you know, I mean, look, let's face it. We see ourselves reflected in our pets, don't we? Anyway, Eddie, the dog in the book, lives with Jack on his boat. They go to a few restaurants together, in one case to Fisherman's Wharf. Not to be confused with me, because I no longer go to any restaurants in Fisherman's Wharf for a number of reasons, which I will not discuss. But the character goes to Fisherman's Wharf. Eddie goes with him, and he eats there. And Eddie does play a critical role in one action scene, which I cannot give away because it would destroy the moment. But I'll send you a free copy of Abuse of Power so you can read it yourself. So before I go and take some more calls, which I don't really want to do right now, I want to read you another passage from Abuse of Power. If I could find the page, I don't know if I can. I really can't. I lost it. Remember, he's talking with the Muslim in England who's going to help him. Well, they have an argument about radical Islam. I wish to God I could find it. Here it is. Here it is. I got it. Okay, so they go to London, him and the beautiful Sarah, the Muslim woman who is helping Jack Hatfield in my novel, Abuse of Power. And he says to him, we really do need your help, Faisal, Sarah goes on. The hand of Allah is planning an attack, a massive one, and that can only be bad for all of us. Not just Muslims, Jack added, but we're talking about the future of Western civilization here, your own son's future. Faisal looked torn. Jack wasn't sure whether he'd help or kick them out. Apparently, Faisal wasn't sure either, but then he took the USB key from Sarah and got to his feet, moved to his laptop on the table. And then I'm not going to give you the plot details. Later on, Sarah is asleep on the sofa. Jack slumps in the armchair across from her, only half awake when Faisal said, I know who you are, you know. That got Jack's attention. He pulled himself upright, unsure what to expect. Faisal sat at the dining table reading one of his textbooks. A clock on the wall said it was approaching 2 a.m. The decryption software had been running on the laptop for close to an hour, numbers and symbols skittering across its screen. Faisal looked up from his book. It took me a while to remember you. I saw your photograph in the newspaper some time ago. There was an article about the Home Secretary banning you from travel to this country. You're an American television host. Jack shrugged. Close enough. I remember because we talked about you at the college, about the things you've said, your hatred of Muslims, your desire to kill 100 million of us. Jack didn't like the direction this was heading. That was taken completely out of context. I don't hate all Muslims. Just a few, then? It was an accusation, not a question. I saw the mistrust in your eyes when you first looked at me. You have to understand my perspective, Jack said. There are a lot of radicals out there, like the Hand of Allah, people who would want to destroy America. Yes, and that's why I agree to help you and Sarah. But don't you see that when you say such hateful things, it makes men like me feel as if you're talking about us as well? I understand, but it's a very delicate balance. And I'm sure you have even more to fear from radicals than I do. You're 100% right about that, said the Muslim who's helping them. He was quiet a moment as he closed his book and stared at the laptop, watching the software do its magic. Then he said, but it isn't just the radicals. My mother is Indian and my father is Pakistani. And our extended family is a mix of many different beliefs. Some are liberal Muslims, and they may be well be the worst curse there is. Worse than those who want to kill people, bomb them? I don't condone such actions, and I never will. But the liberals are nearly as dangerous in their own way. People who think that pornography and degeneracy and gay marriage are normal, acceptable. To my mind, that's a bigger threat to the stability of Pakistan and the world than anyone can imagine. Jack relaxed a bit and had to stifle a smile. He almost felt as if he were in a bar back home, talking American politics with Tony or the Reb. When I'm not at school, Faisal said, I work in a mobile phone store. There's another man who works there, a fundamentalist Christian, and we've had many conversations about our beliefs. And when it comes to social values, family values, we're in total accord. We agree on almost everything with regard to how life should be led. The laptop beeped and he checked the screen and then typed in a quick entry and started running it again. I'm reading from Abuse of Power by Michael Savage. The point I'm trying to make to you, he said, is that there are many varieties of Muslim, just as there are Catholics or Jews. There are Muslims who are not religious, yet use Islam as a political weapon. They have no interest in following the teachings, yet they're willing to kill for their own self-advancement. Do you realize that in some of our Muslim schools right here in England, they're teaching young students how to properly chop off the hands of thieves? You're kidding me, said Jack. I wish I were. It's right there in their textbooks. He paused, clearly disturbed by the thought. But there are other Muslims like me who are very religious, yet have no taste for violence, no desire to harm anyone. While I may detest what the liberals believe and think that their view of society is dangerous, I don't want to hurt or convert them. I simply want to be left alone, he said. There are many of us who feel that way. And how do you feel when one of those radicals sets off a bomb? Asked Jack. Just as frightened as you do, just as terrified, he paused. Why wouldn't I be? Point taken, Jack said. What I want to stress to you is that when you go on television and speak of Muslims, you should be very careful to separate us, not lump us all together. Well, that's true, but this isn't one-sided, you know. How do you think it feels when Americans are all seen as infidels? Well, those who say such things aren't speaking for me, Faisal told him. All I really want is peace throughout the world. That's all any true Muslim wants. We believe in the blessed words of all the prophets, from Moses to Jesus. We respect others and their religions, and all we ask is that they do the same in return. Jack knew all of this, of course, but it didn't hurt to have a face to attach to it. He had stereotyped Faisal, mistrusted him, the moment he'd walked in the door, and he regretted that. Well, that's good to hear, Jack said, and you're right, I will be more careful. Faisal nodded, satisfied to have had his say. He rose from his chair and gestured to the laptop. This will take some time, and I need to sleep. I'll check its progress in the morning. This is the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
One of the things that we have learned is that the interrogations were not carried out by CIA permanent employees. Rather, they were carried out by people contracted to do so by the agency.
All right, let's stop this liar right now. This is probably the most corrupt woman in the history of the United States of America's Senate. Feinstein, some call her Slimestein, and her husband Richard Blum were exposed as total, dirty, rotten crooks. Now, if you think I'm making this up to make a friend of Dianne Feinstein, you got another guest coming. I'm not making it up. On the day the new Congress convened this year, according to Chuck Neubauer in the Washington Times, Senator Dianne Slimestein introduced legislation to route $25 billion in taxpayer money to a government agency that had just awarded her husband's real estate firm a lucrative contract to sell foreclosed properties at rates, compensation rates, higher than the industry norms. You see, Ms. Slimestein's intervention on behalf of the FDIC was unusual. The California Slimocrat isn't a member of the Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs, who has jurisdiction over FDIC, and the agency is supposed to operate from money it raises from bank-paid insurance payments, not direct federal dollars. But documents reviewed by the Washington Times show that Ms. Slimestein first offered October 30th to help the FDIC secure money for its effort to stem the rise of home foreclosures. Her letter was sent just days before the agency determined that her husband's real estate firm, the Richard Ellis Group, had won the competitive bidding for a contract to sell foreclosed properties that FDIC had inherited from failed banks. At the same time of the contract award, Mr. Blum's private investment firm reported to the SEC that it and related affiliates had purchased more than 10 million new shares in CBRE. The shares were purchased for the going price of $3.77. Monday, CBRE stock closed at $5.14. So that's the story. There's a conflict of interest. There is no trust in the government. The government is out of control. It's run by absolute crooks at every level. This woman, according to many, many records, has been steering contracts to her husband going way back to at least 2000. In fact, I have in my hand right now in the Savage Nation, from the L.A. Times, from the year October 20th, 2000. And it was written by Richard Simon and Greg Krikorian. Now, remember when this was written. The following article, Husband's Business Ties to China Dog Feinstein, was published in October 2000 by the L.A. Times, before the L.A. Times fell as a great newspaper, before the gay liberal invasion of the L.A. Times. This paper was doing great investigative reporting, and they reported that Blum was doing mega business in China, while his wife, a vocal proponent of increased China trade, was in the Senate. So the fact of the matter is, this is an old story. It's just that the level of contempt for the American taxpayer and the level of thievery is beyond anything that the Bonnie and Clyde of politics has ever done. Feinstein and Blum are the Bonnie and Clyde of the U.S. politics, according to some. The fact of the matter is, if you're a minority listening to this show and you get caught robbing, let us say, a bar of soap in a Pick's supermarket, or let's say you're a minority kid and you get caught robbing a gold chain from somebody. Now, I'm not saying you should rob a bar of soap or a gold chain. You would spend more time in the slammer than would Bonnie or Clyde, who apparently lifted $25 billion in taxpayer money in order to reward themselves. Now, what is the chance of Slimestein losing her job in the Senate over this, let alone going to jail? Answer, zero. Why? The Demon Cats, who are the most corrupt party in the history of this republic, will not permit a hearing into Slimestein. Moreover, the Senate rules on conflicts of interest are written so narrowly that nobody in the Senate can ever get caught doing anything wrong unless they're either a drug addict or insane, in which case these two are safe. And they will continue to pilfer and rob, as far as I'm concerned, for the rest of their days. If you think I'm making it up, read the story yourself. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Of course, you can't call me on this because you didn't hear about it and you didn't read about it. And of course, when Slimestein was seen in front of the Senate in some kind of intelligence committee that she heads up, believe it or not, can you imagine this woman is in charge of the United States Senate Intelligence Committee, and she is now interrogating the CIA on their detention interrogation practices. Here is a woman who is as corrupt and as rotten as they come, going back to her days as a mayor in San Francisco. She's now in charge of the United States Senate Intelligence Committee. Do you understand how bad things are? It is a Senate and Congress that's totally out of control. There's absolutely no oversight of them. The fact of the matter is, in my humble opinion, Feinstein pushed the bailout so she could steer $25 billion to an agency that shortly thereafter awarded her husband's real estate firm a large and fat contract to sell foreclosed houses. That's the story according to the news. That's not being reported in your local paper because she's a lady in good standing of the left-wing establishment. San Francisco, Don, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hey, Mike. Just listening to your report about Feinstein and C.B. Richard Ellis, and I wanted to say I'm really surprised because I have a small business down here in Sunnyvale, and I leased a building from CBRE a few months ago, and now, you know, I have no idea where my money's going.
Well, I don't know anything about that. All I know is that the story came out. It said that Feinstein's bill to increase FDIC funding by $25 billion arrived shortly after the agency awarded C.B. Richard Ellis Group, where Blum is chairman of the board, a contract to sell foreclosed houses.
Yeah. Well,
now, Feinstein says she has no knowledge of the company's FDIC contract before being contacted by the reporter. There's no evidence of any conflict of interest or any connection between the senator's foreclosure relief bill and a C.B. Richard Ellis winning a competitively bid contract. Blah, blah, blah. This is not the first time the Feinstein-Blum Bonnie and Clyde team has been questioned about this money, this kind of money. It's gone all the way back to the year 2000, his business dealings in China, her steering contracts to and from him. It's unbelievable to me. Even the left said she was steering contracts during the war to her husband's businesses. I mean, is there no limit to greed? This is like the age of the Romanovs in Russia before the collapse. San Francisco. Judy, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I think Dianne Feinstein is one of the most crookedest people that we have in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And her dealings in 2000, which I talked to everyone about, and everyone said, oh, Judy, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't. I says, for God's sake, Blum's in China. She just passed the law or trade. What the hell do you think's going on?
It's unbelievable to me. I am just astounded that she can get away with this kind of thing. And all you've got to do is ask yourself, has their net worth increased or decreased during her tenure as a senator? It's a simple question. If you were investigating a power team in Washington, one of whom was a senator or a congressperson, the other person a business person, all you got to do is ask yourself, has their wealth increased or decreased since one of the pair came to Washington? Then you investigate what they invested in and when. And then you work it backwards and you decide whether or not there was any wrongdoing. It's very simple how you do these investigations, but we the people don't have any power over this Congress. This Congress is a totally rotten and corrupt banana republic Congress. Stewart in New York on WOR, are you shocked by these allegations about Dianne Feinstein or Richard Blum?
No, Dr. Savage, I am not shocked. I've known it all along since she was put in office. She was crooked. She always has been. Her husband is just following along in the footsteps.
You make a statement, always crooked. I mean, you have to be specific. The L.A. Times was quite specific in the year 2000 when they did an expose on their background in business dealings, China and whatnot. And the L.A. Times in the year 2000 was still doing investigative reporting, and it was still selling newspapers and making a living. The papers have collapsed. That's what's going on in this country today. Florida, Nathan, you're on the Savage Nation. On which topic? Go ahead, please.
The Cuban embargo, you know, there are two reasons I'm against it. Number one, the hypocrisy. China has as bad a human rights record as Cuba does. They back up.
I've heard that before, but let me counter that with another argument. You're arguing that we should lift the Cuban embargo and we should reward the Castro murderers.
Correct.
Okay. What you don't know is that this is the last military dictatorship in the Western Hemisphere. Are you aware of that?
No, I don't agree with you. I think Venezuela is a military dictatorship, and I think Mexico is a narco state.
Well, okay, so you're splitting hairs. I'm certainly not a fan of Hugo Chavez. What do you think is going to result from lifting an embargo against Cuba? What would happen?
That the people, when they start seeing Americans like me get off the cruise ships, they'll suddenly going to say to themselves, why can't I have shoes like that? Why don't I have a camera? And it'll create the same kind of unrest that was
created. But, sir, right now, tourism is very, very important to the Cuban economy. Europeans go there. Canadians go there who want cheap women and cigars. If you want to get a nice college girl for $20 along with your cigar, you go to Cuba now. It's not that they don't see them. Many wonderful liberals go to Cuba now to get cheap boys and girls. You know that.
I wasn't going in that direction. That doesn't interest
me. No. Most of the good libs go to Cuba because they can get a girl for $20, about the price of a cigar. I don't understand what the benefit is here. The fact of the matter is Cuba is in a dictatorship, and it's a military dictatorship. Don't you think by opening up Cuba to trade with America, we're just simply going to prop up the Castro regime?
No, I think that Castro loves the embargo more than anyone, because now, in order to get anything, his people have to go through him. If you start having different tourism and things like that, maybe it'll fragment the economy a little more, like Poland under the openness that they had. It led to Lech Walesa. I don't know whether this will happen or not. What I do know is that the Cuban embargo has accomplished absolutely nothing. We trade with Saudi Arabia. They fund terrorism. Women can't drive in Saudi Arabia, have to wear that hijab. I think I'm pronouncing it okay. What's our excuse for that? I just don't get it.
Well, there is hypocrisy, and you are making some very good points to me. But you should know the following, is that we are the single largest provider of food to Cuba even now. I don't know if you know that. The U.S. provided $700 million in food to Cuba last year, more than anybody else, in fact, more than the next several countries combined. So we're not actually hurting Cuba with regard to that. I don't think most people know that we actually provide food to Cuba.
Well, I passed Cuba on a cruise ship going to Cozumel from Fort Lauderdale, and I said, and not that I'm so anxious to see, I don't really like that area of the world anyway, but the point that I'm making is, it seems to me that if the Cuban people started interacting more with Americans, people like me, people like you, there might grow some unrest. I believe that isolating them in this way just hurts the poor individual Cubans.
You know, you make some good points. I understand that I'm not a diehard. I don't like the Castro brothers because I know that they're dictators and they're thieves, and the people are prisoners on their own island. I'm not certain one way or the other what's best for us at the end of the day. And so I'm open on this one. You make some very good points, Nathan, and I appreciate your calling the Savage Nation. Let's move on to a different topic. In Houston, Texas, Don awaits us on the Savage Nation. Don, please go ahead.
Michael, I want to know why the FBI, why the Justice Department are not involved in investigating Dianne Feinstein.
Because they're not right-wing terrorists. Only the returning military veterans are investigated by the FBI. The answer is because he was vetted by Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer when he was an attorney here in San Francisco. And does that make any sense to you?
Yes.
Savage.
I had a geometry teacher in high school. He had two fingers on his right hand. He was a tough guy. He was an Irishman and real tough, but a very good teacher, and the kind of teacher who made you come up to the blackboard and perform at the blackboard, and if you didn't, he ridiculed you. He didn't curse you out, but he called you a dummy, basically. He says, now, what's the matter with you today, Michael? Is your brain not functioning? That kind of thing. And believe me, you didn't want to wind up in front of that class not knowing your stuff because you didn't want to be humiliated in front of your peers, called your classroom. But in those days, it was very clear. If you were smart, you were smart. If you were stupid, you were dumb. And that was the end of it. And no one changed anything. So to make a long, he had a left hand with five fingers and a right hand with two fingers. And the two fingers were stubs. But he could still put chalk on a board. And when he said to you, the midterm exams are back, he would read out every name and every score publicly. Now, why do you think he did it? Because he understood that by doing well, you were proud of yourself, and the kids looked up to you, and by doing poorly, you were ashamed of yourself, boys and girls, and you try to do better. Now, how Mr. W lost his fingers is another interesting story. We all knew about it very fast. I forget his full name. It was Mr. W. And it was whispered in the halls of the high school that he lost his fingers, and I'm not glorifying it, planting a bomb for the IRA. Now, I don't know whether it was true, but it was certainly enough to make us understand not to mess around with this teacher. And we didn't. We respected him. Whether it was true or not is irrelevant. That's who we had for teachers in those days.
Savage.
I think my dog has an itching attack from watching Will Blitzer, because he wants to see the man arrested for sedition and deported. Every time he sees one of these talk show guys on CNN, my dog starts to scratch. Every time he sees Neil Cavuto on Fox, the dog starts to like almost rip his ears out. He can't take it anymore. Teddy understands reality. I have to turn the news off in front of a two-year-old dog. That's what I think is going on. He sees the leprechaun, the dog starts to howl. Had to take the poor dog to the vet. Oh, God, poor Teddy. You see, sickness comes to everyone. He was scratching now for a month, no matter what we tried. Turns out he has a staph infection on his skin. How does a dog get a staph infection? So I asked the vet, is it transferable to humans? And the answer was, well, they say no, because it's a different staphylococcus species. I sure hope she's right. I'll tell you the truth. Because the minute I heard it, I started scratching in the nose, the inside of my ear itched, in the nostril. You ever get an itch in the nostril? The minute I heard staph infection of his skin, and I had to give him a steroid shot and put him on antibiotics, the nostril itch, the eyelid, the ear. I could make half of America start to itch right now. A lot of it is suggestive, I'll be honest with you.
Savage.
A loaf of bread for $8? A gallon of milk, $10? Gas prices, $8 a gallon? That's right. This may seem far-fetched, but it's the threat that you're facing today and over the next 11 months. This great American apocalypse threatens to not only wipe out your savings and investments, but it could change the way you live your life forever. And what has our government done in response? They continue to print trillions of dollars of money, which trashes the value of our hard-earned dollar and sends the cost of living skyrocketing. Go to crisis5.com and watch the video for free. That's crisis5.com. Watch the free video today. It may be too disturbing for some viewers, but believe me, it's a reality you need to see. Go to crisis5.com. Watch the free video from Weiss Research and get the tools you need to survive the great American apocalypse of 2011. That's crisis5.com.
Call Michael now at 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
I would like you to ask yourself the next time you're on a dark street and you're approached by a dangerous group of people and you've got to make a phone call. Would you call 911 or would you dial the ACLU? When you answer that question, you'll know which side of the thin blue line you should be standing on. Do you want the streets ruled by the animals with the 40 caliber guns? Then shut your big liberal pie hole, because otherwise you wind up like in Iraq where you can't go down the street, you stupid mad dog. The legislators in America, virtually all the way up to the top, have stabbed the American people in the back. They don't represent us on any issue whatsoever. Have they protected you from the onslaught of illegal aliens? Have they protected you from the onslaught of the deviants who are trying to break the brick of civilization called marriage? No. They support nothing but special interests. Whoever buys them off gets their vote.
Savage.
A freelance TV producer discovers the cover-up of a failed radical Muslim terrorist attack. The FBI tells him to stay off the case, but they don't know Jack Hatfield. From nationally syndicated radio talk show host Michael Savage, the new thriller, Abuse of Power. Working with a veteran Green Beret and a seductive Yemeni agent, Jack Hatfield exposes a terrorist group known as the Hand of Allah. They uncover a plot within the highest corridors of power that could dwarf 9/11. Abuse of Power, a lightning-paced thriller that spans the globe from Europe and Israel to the back alleys of San Francisco's Chinatown. Based on a true story of a journalist smeared by a liberal media attack group. Abuse of Power, the new thriller from New York Times best-selling author Michael Savage. Available now at Amazon.com or at a bookstore near you. Abuse of Power. Get it while you still can.
I'm in the I need a three-phase cooling tower motor to stay in business. Business.
At Grainger, we know what business you're in.
If we take good care of our customers, they'll take good care of us. Business.
The business of getting things done. That's why we offer over 900,000 products and the support you need to get your job done right and on time. Call, click Grainger.com, or stop by one of our branches. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Michael Savage. I want you to know that freedom of speech is not free. Believe me, courageous radio stations like this one want your advertising dollars to pay their bills and be able to bring you my show and all the others you've come to depend on for the real truth. Talk radio in many ways is America's immune system, but it needs your booster shot. If you're a business, you need to put your money where your heart is. Advertise on this station. And here's the good news. According to Talkers Magazine, ads airing on talk stations like this one generate 2 to 3 times the response from customers than other radio formats would generate. Why? Because talk radio listeners support with their dollars the advertisers that support the radio shows that they love. If you're a business, any kind of business, I don't care if you're a roofer, a plumber, advertise on this station. If you're a listener, do business with the businesses that advertise on my show and others on this station. For more information on how you can buy ads on this station or my show, call 877-474-6605. Write it down, 877-474-6605, to protect freedom of speech. God bless America.
Do you want to experience the full impact of the Michael Savage Show? Become a premium member and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcasts. Now you can take the Michael Savage Show anywhere and listen whenever and wherever you want. Get hooked up with the Michael Savage Show today. Go to www.talkradionetwork.com. That's talkradionetwork.com. Click on Savage's picture and sign up now. Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
We're playing Hawaiian music because, first of all, I'd like to be there right now, truthfully. But I'm going to wait it out. Great place. It's a great place. Great. I lived there for a number of years, you know. You know what it's like for a kid from New York to go, like, to wind up in Hawaii? I'd never been in a place like that. It was unbelievable. It was like walking into, a heaven itself. So anyway, to make a long story short, we're talking about a Turn It Off now, a long time ago. You know, when you land in heaven, you think you can do anything. And you have hubris. Hubris is a sense of confidence that only children and the mad have and can understand. But when a grown-up has hubris, it becomes very dangerous. And in my case, that was true. So you get to the islands, and it's a magical time. You never saw sunsets like this. They can break your heart. When you see plumeria blossoms lying on the, you know, I used to bicycle up to the university. I would see plumeria blossoms lying on the sidewalk. I would stop the bicycle and pick up the plumeria blossoms and look at them and smell them. And I'd never seen anything like this. Sure, I had seen rose petals on the fence in the Bronx when I was a little kid. They were soft and beautiful, but this was something unique. The scent was unlike anything I had ever experienced. And so you see these sunsets and these sunrises and all of these things that you have never seen, and birds in the jungles in the back of the rainforest that you never saw or heard before. And you start to get tuned into your own body in a way you've never been tuned in. If you've never lived in the tropics and it's the first time, and you start shedding clothing and shoes and leather and you put it all away, and now you're in flip-flops, and then you're in shorts, and all of a sudden at night the breeze comes through your sleeves, and you start to become alive in a new way, and you go in the warm water. So you start to feel like the original man, and you buy a sailboat. It's the first thing you do. And so I bought a sloop-rigged boat. She was not catch-rigged. I was mistaken. I remember now. Terangi was a sloop-rigged sailing vessel about 22 feet long, and it was made of white oak primarily, and had been built in Oregon and sailed out by somebody else to Hawaii. I bought it for nothing, you know, next to nothing. She was in perfect shape and no engine, as I said. So I buy this boat. I put it into the Alawai Yacht Harbor. And that's where I kept it. And, you know, most people who own boats mainly use them to drink on and hang out. And it's as good a thing to do as any. But I was foolish enough to actually want to sail the boat, even though I knew nothing about sailing. And I took it out without an engine. I knew it was pretty easy to get out because the wind was prevailing out of the yacht harbor. And I said, wow, this is great. And so I, you know, with a few friends, I was on a boat alone. They just cast me off, released the lines, pushed me backwards. And there we go, down the Alloy Channel, out into the channel and out into the ocean. I was zipping along with the sail out, and I was zipping along out onto sea. And there I was. I said, this is super. I'm really enjoying myself. Then I realized I didn't know how to get back. I said, how do I turn this thing around if the wind is blowing out? Well, I didn't know how. And I said, well, I better figure this out, because if this keeps up for a while, I'll soon be out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and there'll be no way back at all. I had no flares, no radio, no engine. All I had was confidence that was bordering on the insane. The first thing I did was I resorted to common sense, and I dropped the sails, because that, of course, would cut the motion of the boat. I dropped the sails, and using the tiller, I turned the boat around, you know, flip-flop, flip-flop, until I got the boat pointing back towards the land. And then I figured if the wind is blowing against me, there must be a way to go into a prevailing wind and still move against it. I've seen other people do it. And little by little, and lo and behold, I was able to, luckily, I don't know whether it was current or God's hand itself pushed me back into the harbor, but I learned quickly that sailing is not for the amateur. That's all there was to it. So those days are over. But she was my first boat. I don't have a life ring from Tarangi because I didn't even have a life ring. I don't even think I had a life preserver. You know, those were the age. That was an age when people had total, like, madness about what they could do and accomplish in the late 60s. But now I drive a power boat, and it has all sorts of safety equipment on it. Sure, not enough as I should have. But I like power boats a lot better because they're easier to get out. I can get this thing out of the way. It's 45 feet, twin diesels, 19 tons, unladen with fuel and water, and I can go out on it alone and come back on it alone in almost any wind. And that's the good part. You can get out in 12, 15 minutes, and there it is. It's just you and the birds and the water and the land, and that's it. And that's what I go out for now, is just to look at the water and look at the birds and look at the landforms, mainly, and the seals I like. And I can name every bird on the bay. More or less, I know every bird on the bay as a species. Not by name, not like, how you doing, howdy. I don't mean that. Species-wise, I've come to understand that every animal has a personality. Isn't this strange? It's not that the PETA folks are correct. I still eat animals. But they all have a personality when you get to know them. And they all want to live. Dad taught me that everything wants to live. That's how he taught me to respect human life. He said, you'll notice that a cat wants to live, a dog wants to live, a rat wants to live, a mouse wants to live, a bird wants to live. And he had learned that when he had accidentally shot a bird as a kid. Remember, this is odd to a country boy listening to the show. It sounds very weak. But remember, I'm a New York City boy. And to us, it's a different experience than it is to you guys. I respect your ability to hunt for your food. But every animal actually has a personality when you get to know that animal. They're all different. Just as we're all different, every human is unique and like a snowflake. Well, guess what? So are animals. They're all unique. It's amazing when you come to understand that.
Savage.
Did I ever tell you about One-Armed Frank? You haven't heard the One-Armed Frank story. Do I have a moment? My father, I told you, was an antique dealer. May he rest in peace. So we would come home from... Well, he had a guy who came in with one arm. I don't know how the guy became one arm. But he, you know, you didn't know a lot of people with one arms in those days. Even today, they have a... I guess you don't know one-armed people today. They have a fake arm. But he had the arm sewed up, you know, in a suit. So, all right, so you accept him. His name, though, was One-Armed Frank. Because nobody hid reality in those days. Today it's like, oh, yeah, he's normal. He's just like a... In those days, it was One-Armed Frank. Today it's like, oh, he's better than normal, man. He's special. Like, if you have one arm, you're better than a guy with two arms today. You know what I mean? If you have no arms and no legs, you're Superman in the politically correct world of today. But in those days, if you were missing an arm, that's what you would name, One-Armed Frank. Whatever your anomaly was, that was your name. It made it easier for the average person to remember everybody. So One-Armed Frank was a very sweet guy, but a breath on him. Now, I want to tell you, there are bad breaths, then there are very bad breaths, then there are medicinal problems. This had to be solved with a medicine that hasn't been invented yet.
It was winter time, and once in a while, my old man would drive one-armed Frank home, and I'd get stuck in the back, and one-armed Frank would get shotgun. Now, I want to tell you something. It could be minus 4 degrees in New York. You had a ride with all the windows open. Did you ever have a person like this, Greg? I'm serious, where it's medicinally like a medical problem, where he says anything, and the car fills with a noxious fume. Where you are, you don't know what to do. You know, are we going past the Trun's meat factory? No, we're not in Williamsburg. Did we run over a small furry creature that got caught in the muffler and shot up through the floorboard? Did I step on something on the way? No, it's Frank talking.
Savage.
Someone once said this to me, a professor back in 1970. He said, you know, you're the only person I've ever met. He said, it's astonishing that you can function. He says, you have no barrier between your conscious and your subconscious. You actually function with both at once. So I said, and? So? What's wrong with that? In other words, I've plumbed my depth sufficiently through self-analysis to know who I am, and I'm not ashamed of it. What do I got to hide? I'm not like most people. I mean, well, what's there to hide? When everything I see isn't so pretty. But that's life, you know. Out of the muck, a lotus will grow. We all come from the muck, and we all go back to the muck. We come from the muck. We go back to the muck. What more do you need to know? None of us are demigods. None of us are God. Once you understand that we arise from a smelly ether called the swamp of life, and that is what we go back to, the rest is very easy. Then you stop worrying about if you have an extra little flab on your stomach and a gray hair and a mole on your face. And you suddenly accept yourself for what you are. Then you can wear an undershirt and look at yourself in the mirror and say, that's it, thank God I'm alive. And I got two legs and two arms and two lungs and a beating heart. What more do I need? I'm going to look like a bicycle rider who takes cocaine? Oh, God, what am I talking about? Why are you listening to me? I'm going up and down the scale here. I'm playing the scales for you on the Savage Nation. No, I'm a little upset because I opened a letter just now, a personal letter. I shouldn't have done it during the show. I got all my mail and I opened one from a relative. It's a shocker. It's a picture of my late father from a year before he died. Photo of daddy enclosed. Your mother kept it in her bag till she did. No, I never saw this picture. He looked healthy. He shouldn't have died this young. I'm older than he was, and he died. It's eerie. Yeah, I thank God Oscar the Cat is in here. He's liable to curl up next to me, and it will be all be all over. He was in better shape than I am. Are you kidding me? And he died anyway? Not a gray hair on his head. And thin? I put on weight. I got gray hair, and I'm still kicking. Go figure it out. You know how many guys died in their 30s that I knew who were runners? Huffing and puffing with watches, and they'd invite him, and every minute they looked at their watch. They wouldn't touch this, and they ate perfect. They dropped dead like flies. I don't say don't exercise, but no man is made to run like an Ethiopian bee picker day and night. You're not living in Ethiopia at 12,000 feet. That's why they win these races everywhere. That's where they run at high altitudes. You don't. Every year is a few blowouts here with the San Francisco, what do they call it? The marathon. Every year they got someone dropping dead before the finish line. If you want to run, go run. Enjoy yourself. This too shall pass. I have a whole different theory of exercise at a certain point in your life. Now, remember, I wrote the book on nutrition, and I also exercise moderately, but the key word is moderately. This excessive, like you're on a treadmill, heart attackville. It's worse than sitting in front of a television and eating Doritos. And I'm telling you, no human being has made the... You ever see old men running like that? It's insanity, total insanity. Show me in nature where a man runs like that after the age of 40, unless he's being chased by a predator who wants to burn his house down. Nobody runs like that if they don't have to. What did the great American writer say, Mark Twain? He said, I get all my exercise going to the funerals of my more athletic friends. It was funny. It worked for him. For him, it worked. I'm sure if he ran, he would have been dead at 30. I'll never forget when I stopped running the day. Are you interested in any of this? Or do you want to talk about home invasion? I'm in a sweat from the whole story already. I ate nuts during the break. I got this picture. Now I'm having palpitations. I think I'll have a pizza for dinner tonight and beer. Nah, I think tonight I'm going to drive into the city. I'm not in the city. I'm not in San Francisco now. I'm out in the suburban location, one of my Arafatian houses. I have many locations. I don't know where I'm going to be the next night. That way, if anyone, they don't know where I'm going to, because I don't know where I'm going to broadcast from or where I'm going to sleep. I have several locations. I have to. That's what the liberals are today. I have to watch out for them because they're all psychopaths. Every last one of them belongs in a mental hospital. Or let's say, or in a straitjacket. That's all. Forget it. I don't want to go into bashing liberals. It's been done too often. And I did it better than anybody else. Oh, let's move on. Now, you see, what do you call it when you talk and talk? And he looked good. Look at this. I can't get it out of my head. I shouldn't have looked at these pictures. He was, God bless him. A lot of good it did him, the wife. Black hair, thin, kept in shape, and dead. And what about Winston Churchill? He sat in the bathtub drinking brandy and smoking cigars. It hurt him? Could you picture him running around, let's say, England during World War II, saying, I got to do a stress break now? Our president, all our NBA-like leaders, they all run, they're in perfect shape, and they can't think. He sat with a brandy and a cigar in a bathtub. He was able to lead Britain through the darkest days of World War II. How is that? How's that possible? Stop with the sobriety, have a drink, and sit in a bathtub with a cigar. Maybe you can save the country. You'll have some insights. Like, take the handcuffs off the men, number one, and tell the liberals to go to hell, number two. That might save America. KNEW, San Fran. What? Someone from England sent me a new one. I use San Francisco, San Francisco. San Fran. She called us something else, a friend from somewhere, a long email. San Fran. I can't remember why I bring it up. Going back to the Lower East Side of New York. Dad owns a small antiques mart. Little old Michael's cleaning bronzes in the back, and there's Louis the Bum from the Bowery, who in those days, he was a drunk. He wasn't a bum. He worked. Dad would have him in on the weekends, and he'd clean the bronzes and whatever he did down there. I loved Louis. Louis was a great guy. But now you got to understand, this guy was a stoned alcoholic of the old school. Skinny like a rail. White guy, skinny like a rail, smoked like unfiltered cigarettes. But one of the nicest guys on earth. He wears the rubber apron. He's cleaning downstairs, does the bronzes. Then, of course, I took over because Dad wanted cheap child labor, and where else are you going to get it from his son, you know? So I'm doing the thing. So I got to know Louis over the years, and he taught me various things. Like once we had Louis over to the house. I'll never forget it. I was so proud that my father took this guy who I liked all the way out to Queens and invited him to dinner. I don't know what came over. Maybe it was Thanksgiving or whatever. And Louis had dinner with us at the table, and the guy was surprisingly erudite, and he knew things. And like after dinner, we did games, and Louis the drunk showed me how to bend nails. He showed me mind over matter. He took a nail and he showed me that if you put your fingers, blah, 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 and put your mind on it and keep up the pressure, the nail would bend. I was shocked because I was a skinny kid with little hands, and I bent the nail. And he taught me mind over matter, but it was all molecular because you put the heat and the pressure, blah, 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 eventually that nail is going to bend. But I learned in life it's the same thing. It's all willpower, okay? Now there's another element to the story. So Louis is this kind of guy, interesting, but an alcoholic, and this and that. Years go by. He lives alone in Williamsburg. In those days, Williamsburg was like a slum, zero, you know, oilcloth city, leftover apartments from the last century. No one wanted to be there but the poor. So he lives there alone. He's very lonely. He gets a monkey. He wants a monkey. Now, out of the world, nobody in those days had a monkey. Dogs, yes. Cats, yes. No. Who had a monkey in those days? Louis gets a monkey. But Louis don't just get a spider monkey, one of the skinny little monkeys. Louis gets a woolly monkey. Now, woolly monkeys are already strong. They got a chest on them. They got strong hands. And Louis's in love with this monkey. For a couple of months, they're inseparable. Wherever he goes, there's the monkey. And the monkey's on his shoulder and where he's cleaning and he's happy. Now, Louis was the kind of guy that if he went to a bar in the Lower East Side, I remember the name to this day, named Hamill and Corn. Whatever money he made for my father, he'd take 2 minutes late, he'd be in the bar, and he'd throw money in a jukebox, and he would whistle and sing, and he'd buy everyone drinks till he was broke. He'd stumble out in the street. He would get hit by a car, sleep on a bar. He didn't care, live for the booze, and that was it, but he had a heart of gold. So Louis gets the monkey, finally has someone to fill his empty nights, and as I say, they were inseparable. Well, as time went on, we get a call. Louis's in the hospital. He's dying. What? The monkey went crazy in his apartment, attacked him, and almost ripped him to pieces. And he suffered for 6 months in the hospital. I don't know which hospital. Probably Bellevue, because that's where they all wound up. And the monkey went at him. And you don't know what a monkey's like when it goes crazy. You try to stop an enraged monkey without a weapon. He ripped his neck. He ripped his face. He ripped his arms. He ripped his leg. He ripped his crotch. He ripped his behind. Louis was ripped up pretty bad, and eventually, Louis knew that the instincts had to kick in. It was him or the monkey, and he decided it was better him than the monkey. He didn't consult a liberal book on how to deal with a crazed monkey. He just fought with it and killed it. I think that's what the bottom line is here. But the point is that even a lonely drunk needs companionship at night. In his case, he found the monkey. It was probably the right thing for him to do. So right now, you could see that Louis was a pioneer in a way, in a sense that he understood that monkeys were dangerous long before they did in India when they turned him into a sacred animal. And that's the Louis and the monkey story on the Savage Nation. You got to admit it wasn't bad. It's nicely entertaining. And that's it. That's the story. The bottom line is, don't get a monkey as a pet.